We're pleased now to welcome in Deacon Harold Burke Sivers from the great city of Portland. Deacon, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Hey, it's good.
It's been
good,
a while.
Good. It has been a while. I'm a native of Portland, of course, and I know you're pretty well known in my hometown, and it's just great to hear your voice again. I'm looking at a beautiful book right in front of me, Our Life of Service, the Handbook for Catholic Deacons that you have authored. Comes to us from the Ave Maria Press out of Notre Dame, and you can get it at your favorite Catholic bookstore. You can order it from AveMariaPress.com. How are things in your life, Deacon?
Things are good. Things are definitely picking up again. You know, 2 weeks to flatten the curve has turned into almost 2 years, which is a source of both trial and opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Trial in the sense that obviously not going out and speaking for a year, you know, when that's your main source of income, you know, creates a fairly difficult situation. But thanks be to God, we were able to work around that. And opportunity in the sense that, you know, it kind of treated like a spiritual stop sign, you know, where God said, okay, slow down, take a deep breath, take a look at where you are right now in your relation with me and where you want to be, you know, so take time to do that. Plus all the kids came home from college, and so, you know, they were home for a year, so we had extra time with them we didn't expect. And I wrote this book, Life of Service, during COVID as well. So good things did come out of it.
Yeah, we experienced that, kids coming home from college or not leaving for college even. It's amazing amount of family time that we didn't anticipate.
Yes, exactly right. And you know, and those are things we really can't take for granted.
No.
You know, life is so short. And, you know, and God has really given, I think, a number of us opportunities to really appreciate the people that are in your life and just really tell the people that you love how much you love them. You know what I mean? You know, this is not to put things off. Oh, I'll do it next week. Oh, I'll do it tomorrow. Yeah, you just never know. So I think this would give me a greater appreciation for the fragility and the beauty of life and friendship and family.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking of this sometimes as a giant alarm clock that just keeps ringing, and right now we don't know how to shut it off, but like just waking us all up, you know, like maybe we were all getting a little too comfortable, and maybe, you know, we weren't turning to the Almighty and with, you know, with our problems, with our petitions, with our, and realizing that He's in charge, not anybody else, you know, and that God hasn't left the building. And I hear that alarm clock going off. They're saying, pay attention, pay attention, pay attention.
Well, that's a great observation, actually, about being uncomfortable, because if you look at a crucifix, you know, Jesus was uncomfortable.
Right.
And also, if we want to take our lives and our relationships to that next level, we do have to get uncomfortable. And the cross has always been a source of inspiration for me, you know, when I'm afraid to do new things or to try new ideas. And, you know, I look at that crucifix and realize that there is no resurrection without crucifixion, you know, and most of life is suffering. Psalm 90, a psalm written by Moses, says our span is 70 years, right, or 80 for those who are strong. And most of these are emptiness and pain.
Mm-hmm.
They pass swiftly, and we are gone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a reminder, you know, to us, you know, that we need to be constantly aware that we're in the presence of God, and to even appreciate times of trial, because often it's those times that bring us closer to God.
Yeah, I mean, it's that old expression, not a religious one, but whatever doesn't kill you probably makes you better.
Yeah,
you know,
right, exactly right.
You know, and I mean, I look back at my life, and not that I'm ready to check out, but I look back and you know, all the major turning points, all the major awakenings, if you were, awarenesses, things that really did me good. Most of my, I was drag kicking and screaming, you know, at the time. And yet now I look back and I go, boy, I'm glad that happened. I'm really glad that happened, you know.
Yeah, I've been realizing the same thing. You know, Bob, realizing that in my life right now, I'm closer to the end than I am to the beginning. You know, and that reality, you know, when you see your kids come back from college, it goes, oh, my goodness, they're adults now. And the kind of conversations you're having with them. And, you know, you're still remembering conversations when they were kids.
Right.
And they're still your kids, but now they're adult kids with their own opinions, you know, forming their own ideas. And so it's a very interesting contrast. But it also helps me appreciate the fact that, I mean, even for me, on a practical level, Bob, that, you know, I need to be doing some things different, like taking better care of myself. You know what I mean? When I was traveling, you know, before COVID, I was in a rhythm. You know, and I was exercising and doing all these things. It was just a kind of a flow. And then all of a sudden, just stopped, like literally put the brakes on, stopped. And then I got a little, not clinically depressed, but I got like, what's going to happen now? And, you know, and I took it out on food. You know, I'm just being honest. I mean, I just, you know, wallowed my sorrows in the refrigerator.
You know, it's
I don't know, probably about 30, 35 pounds, which I'm. Right after, of course, Christmas, to work to get that back off and get myself back in shape. You know, because it's a whole holistic, right? It's mind, body, and spirit.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all three things together.
Well, it's really funny.
I think all the other areas suffer as well.
Yeah, I know that syndrome. You know, I've been in it where it's like, well, nothing else is working, except my taste buds, and. And
right.
I can put that donut or maple bar in my mouth and it tastes pretty good. It can be dark and gloomy, but this tastes pretty good. And then you have another one, you know. So.
Well, it makes you feel better too.
It does. It does.
The sugar hit and all that kind of stuff. But I'm realizing now, you know, if I want to really accomplish things that God wants me to do, I need to put all three back in alignment again. So,
Harold, do you want me to ship you a treadmill for Christmas? Is that what you're saying?
You know, actually, it's funny you mentioned that because a friend of ours just gave us theirs. Cause I guess they upgraded and got a new one, and so they gave us and the old one's like a gym one, digital and everything. So, yeah.
Wow.
So I'm definitely going to be using that.
I was going to say, we may have to get you over to the Multnomah Club.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, indeed. They won't even let me in the front door there. But well, we're talking with Deacon Harold Burke Sivers, a great deacon out of Portland, Oregon, my hometown, and has written a wonderful book. What prompted this, other than COVID and you had some time on your hands, what were you thinking when you decided it? I mean, that's a big project, writing a book. You don't just do that in your spare time.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. And it's been on my heart to write something on the diaconate for a long time. And so now that I had this time, I'm going to say, you know, I want to put something together. What I want to emphasize here. So what I did in this book was talk about the last leg or third tier of diaconal ministry, which is service. So often you hear about word, altar, and charity is kind of the three, what's called munis, or functions, tasks, or duties of deacons.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the Latin better, docendi, sancta fecandi, regendi, teaching, sanctifying, and leading.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that third piece, that leading piece of the diaconal ministry, which is often, you know, called service, that I wanted to focus on in this book. And basically I did it in three sections. The first part of the book talks about kind of the theology and the spirituality of diaconal service. So say you're working as a visitant to Paul, you're a layperson working with a deacon. You know, you're saying to yourself, well, what difference does this deacon make being here? I mean, we're both doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how is lay spirituality different from diaconal spirituality? So that was the first part. The second part was serving in a parish, and the third part is serving outside of the parish, where, quite frankly, I think we're most effective as deacons when working outside of the parish, because the people that need to hear the gospel, that need to hear the message, that's where they are. And our job is to bring the gospel message to them and then bring them to the healing ministry of the priest.
When you're out in the community, ministering, if you will, to non-Catholics or other maybe fallen away Catholics or people that aren't regular churchgoers, are they surprised that you're ordained? Do they say, "What's a deacon?"
Yeah, they often don't know what the deacon is because, especially if they left the church and go into a Protestant church, the Protestant church has deacons too. So that they, so they don't understand what the difference is. So it's the way I just explain it to people is the bishop is, the chief teacher and preacher, administrator, all that of a particular church or a diocese, archdiocese. Mm-hmm. And he can't do everything himself. And his two main jobs are to facilitate communion and to evangelize. And since he can't do everything himself, he has help. So he has the priest on the one hand to assist him with this ministry of facilitating communion, bringing people together around the sacraments, especially, of course, the most blessed sacrament of the Eucharist and the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass.
Mm-hmm.
And the second job is to evangelize, and that's what the deacons are for. We're to assist the bishop with his ministry of evangelization. And that's why even when the Pope says Mass, a deacon reads the gospel, the Evangelium, the good news, that life-changing encounter with Jesus Christ. That's what the deacon is supposed to help the bishop with. Of course, that's why I emphasize outside of the parish, because those are the people who need to hear the message more so than others.
So what is the church teach about the purpose of the diaconate, both within a parish and just outside, in the world at large?
Yeah, so in Acts chapter 6, that's where we see the first deacons. Though they weren't called officially deacons there, but you see that the apostles laying their hands on those first seven guys, and their ministry was one right from the start of service to the community, and assistance to the bishops and the priests. And so, the vast majority of permanent deacons, because now there's two tracks, right? There's deacons that are heading toward priesthood, seminarians, that may be ordained for 6 to 12 months as deacons, and then those of us who are permanent deacons. I've been ordained 19 years now as a deacon.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are two different tracks, I guess,
right,
if you will, of
right.
deacon, but the purpose is still the same, to assist the bishop with his ministry of evangelization. And so our witness is to bring that life changing encounter with Jesus Christ, the Gospels, and make it come alive in people's lives outside of the church. So in the book, they didn't rhyme with the car. I was going to say that the priest is the shepherd, and the deacon is like the sheepdog.
Mm-hmm.
And the sheepdog is essential in the work of the shepherd, because the sheepdog is to round up the sheep, to gather them together, to lead them to the shepherd. And that's what the deacon's supposed to do. We have jobs, we have families, for the most part. I know some deacons who are actually celibate, either because they chose celibacy at the time of ordination or their wives died, and they're not remarried. So our job is to we have families, we have jobs, we have, we're in the trenches with the people Monday through Saturday. So our job is to witness in a public, consecrated, ordained way, we sacramentalize Christ's service ministry in the world, and that's really, I think, what sets us apart.
Yeah, you anticipate my next question. You're a married man. You have kids. When you became a deacon 19 years ago, I presume those kids were pretty little, or maybe not even born. How do you? The enormous responsibilities of the diaconate and the enormous responsibilities of being a father.
Yeah, so a couple things. First of all, you have to have the priorities straight at all times. Number one, relationship with God. Number two, your marriage. Number three, everything else. If you get that order right, you're good to go. And some people are surprised and say, well, deacon, I thought for sure you put your family first. And I said, my friend, if I'm not right with God, I'm no good to my wife and kids.
Yeah, that's true.
So that has to come first. And so remember what happens. In ordaining deacons, what the church is saying is that we recognize that you are serving, if you will, in the diaconia in your house. You are serving your wives and children well, and the church recognizes that and is saying to this man, discern with us you know, go through the diaconal, because remember, your diaconate formation doesn't mean you're going to be ordained a deacon. It means you're discerning.
Mm-hmm.
So help us to discern if God wants you to take those gifts that you're serving so well in your family and to share those gifts with the entire church. That's the really what the whole discernment process is about, and keeping that balance. And the last piece is, Bob, listen to your wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that sincerely. I mean, I don't mean it as a joke. I mean, sincerely, listen to your wife. Because I tell you right now, there's no way I could be doing the things I'm doing now if I was not paying close attention to my wife's heart.
Mm-hmm.
And really listening to her. Like when she's telling me, here, I need you home during this time and this time. Or, let's talk about what's going on spiritually. I mean, we're praying with her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the stuff right there. And if you're not doing that, you're not going to be able to serve well in the church as a deacon.
So, yeah, it's mind-boggling how it seems to me. You got a lot of balls you're juggling there, you know. What led you into the diaconate?
Well, ever since I was 9 or 10, I always felt this pull, this tug, this attraction, if you will. I loved going to Mass as a kid. You know, my mom noticed that. And so she always would encourage me. And when I got old enough, I became an altar server, which I loved. I loved being on the altar. Even now, you know, all these years later, I still get that same childlike thrill,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I'm serving at the altar as a deacon. You know, and that never went away. And I thought it might be lived out originally in monastic life. So I was a member of a monastic community for a while, the Benedictines. I was discerning a call with them.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually left the monastery, but still felt that God was calling me to something. And that eventually became the diaconate. You know, I was accepted into the program in 1996, but the program didn't start till 97. There was no cohort
mm-hmm.
in 96. So I was in 97 and for 5 years, including a master's degree in theology, was ordained in 2002. And it's been an incredible journey of faith, and the gift that we of how we get to be in people's lives as deacons has just been incredible.
Yeah, you don't just go knock on the bishop's door and say, "I want to be a deacon." And he says, "Okay, well, let's ordain you right now." It doesn't happen that way, does it?
No, there's definitely a process, and there's minimum requirements. You know, in canon law,
right?
You have to be 35. Is the minimum age ordination. You have to be married. If you're married, you have to be married for at least 5 years. If you're a convert, you have to be Catholic for at least 5 years, and other rules, you know, too. And for example, if you participate in abortion, you know, you need to get special mm-hmm. permission, things like that. There's all kinds of things. You know, there's obviously the academic requirements, and some of the weekends the wife has to be there too.
Right.
You know, as they're talking through the responsibilities of diaconate and how it's going to impact the family and things like that. So it really is a time of really discernment and trying to listen to how God is speaking to you. Because God may be saying, well, you know, this is a great idea, but really not for you, or not for you right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some dioceses have, a rule where, you know, the kids have to be a certain age before a man can, begin the process of the diaconate. That was not the case for me. But I think dioceses do that to try to protect the marriage.
Sure.
You know, so that, in a sense, the diaconate doesn't take over the family life.
Well, Deacon, I'm looking at your picture. Did you lie about your age or what? How'd you get in?
No, so I because of my background in monastic life,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's the cost of a spiritual maturity, if you will. You know, they decided to accept me at 30.
Oh, good. I was right.
Yeah, so I didn't meet any of the requirements.
Yeah.
When I was accepted into the program. So, but the requirements are you have to be 35 at ordination. You have mm-hmm. to meet all the requirements at ordination, not start the program at 35. You know,
that's
so.
Nice.
I was ordained just past my 36th birthday.
Wow, that's the same age in the Constitution. You have to be president.
Yeah, well, I can't be president either. So
yeah,
because I wasn't born in the U.S. So yeah.
Oh my goodness! Where were you born?
Barbados.
Oh my goodness! So you weren't born as an American citizen yet, because if your parents were citizens, you could be born anywhere.
Yeah, so if you're in the military, say for example, you have a child born in Germany, they're automatically citizens.
Like a John McCain was born in Panama, I believe. Yeah.
Right.
See, but his parents were American citizens.
Yeah. So it wouldn't work for us.
I'd have voted for you.
No, I don't want to be president anywhere. I'm very happy where I am right now.
You're a smart man. What do you hope people get from this book, Deacon?
Well, I'm hoping for three things. One, for the guys who are discerning, that this will be a wonderful resource as they discern if they're married with their wife. I mean, it's very important that he share this book with his wife so they can discern together. In fact, there's a chapter here on marriage in the diaconate. So even if he just shares, if they read that chapter together and really think about how this is going to impact their marriage, not just negatively, but positively. You know, I found that our marriage got better since I've been ordained. You know, so to talk through all of that, so the guys that are in discernment, guys that are already ordained, they think, what do I need this book for? You know, I've been ordained for a long time. The guys who have read this book, and in fact, there are several deacons who've written essays. At the end of every chapter, I have a deacon friends of mine from all around the country, all different races, all different years of ordination, share their own personal reflection on what I talk about in that particular chapter to give a kind of round it out and to give that very practical, real-world feel, you know, to how the diaconal ministry is exercised. So, and plus, if you've been ordained for a while, say you get a new priest, how are you going to deal with that?
Mm-hmm.
My old priest loved me. The new one may not. What do you do then? So I cover all that in the book. And then finally, for the layperson to really understand the role and the functions of deacons, because often you hear, and I said this right at the beginning of the book, you hear, you're just like, you know, a priest if you can't say mass and hear confession, right?
Right, yeah.
Or kind of say, we have enough priests, we don't need deacons. Yeah. Well, see, people that say that do not understand the diaconate. It's not in competition with the priest.
Right.
The way you solve the priest shortage is by ordaining more priests, not by ordaining deacons.
Right.
You know, so hopefully this will help to really clear up and bring a deeper, richer understanding to the gift of the diaconate in the life of the church.
Very good. Well, Deacon, always good to talk with you. Thanks for keeping them honest there in my hometown, and God's blessings to you and your family in the new year.
Thank you. To you as well. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to all the listeners as well.
Thanks so much. God bless. That's Deacon Harold Burke Sivers, a great, great deacon. A wonderful book, Our Life of Service, the Handbook for Catholic Deacons. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone.